Where's my Starbucks?
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
That is correct. We have no need of transmitters here. Welcome to Knoxville, Tennessee Area News, part of the much larger Reconstructionist Radio News Network that has podcasts spread throughout the United States, Canada, and into Australia. I'm your host, John Cummins. This program features local news stories from the Knoxville, Morristown, Sevierville metropolitan area of Tennessee. We bring you news with an ethical, judicial perspective that you may not have previously considered. The background music you hear is called Desert Rain from the excellent Dutch band Trinity. You can find their music at bandtrinity.com. Let's get on with the news. We have a guest, and I'm really glad to have Paul Lipham from Northern Georgia around Woodstock, right?
That's where I live.
Okay, and he's going to be helping me with this commentary of the news. We want to present the news locally, not just, you know, throw what's happening and not every single thing that's happening, but just provide a little bit of ethical, just, judicial viewpoint, which is a biblical viewpoint of the news. And it's very important because it's hard to figure out what the news, the truth of the news is. Many times I'm finding very often you don't get the detail. There's not enough reporters out there or good reporting to even know what's going on. And one real example is with a local, whenever there's local police. So the title of this episode number 5 is Vaxxers, Vouchers, and When Justice Is Not Aborted. At first, I was thinking of calling it When Justice Was Aborted, but really, there's a couple of examples here where maybe it's not being aborted. It's not being sloughed off. And that may be, you know, a little tinge of good news. So the first article that we're looking at here is from Knoxville, and there is a policeman a couple years ago who evidently someone died at his hands, and we'll look at that article. And I'm clicking on a link right now, but there's a judge in Knoxville who found a blunt deputy used excessive force in a fatal slamming of an unarmed man. And a federal judge dismiss a wrongful death lawsuit against a Blount County Sheriff's Office deputy. And the guy happened to be a martial arts fighter. Now, a few of the things I noted was that he was accused of slamming an unarmed, handcuffed man headfirst onto concrete. A martial arts fighter. The district judge, Pamela Reeves, says that the deputy, Jerry Burns, his actions in 2016, so it's a couple years ago, 3 years ago, where they were beyond the pale legally and constitutionally. Burns had insisted in sworn statements that he and Edwards, who is the guy who was killed, fell to the concrete. The long story short, this guy has been found. I'm saying justice not being aborted in this case, because most cases I've seen around here, police get off, even when someone's killed by shooting, but in this case, by smashing his skull into the sidewalk or into the concrete. Any comments there, Paul?
Well, it's good to see that the officer was held accountable. You're right. It's not that common because there's a lot of corruption. I think a lot of conservatives will tend to overlook the amount of corruption that does happen. They just kind of dismiss the outliers or dismiss reports as outliers and just always try and give the assumption of innocence to the officer, where really it's the people that are being policed that should have the assumption of innocence in most cases. So that's, I guess, I don't know. What do you
Well, I think it's interesting. I'm looking at some. I don't know if you're looking at the article, but there's a this Jerry Burns was a there's a picture of him in his martial arts garb, you know, and he's a big guy, you know, and
yeah.
the judge said the force was not justified, Tom Spangler, who is now a Knox County sheriff, but he was working as a deputy back at that time, he cleared. So another guy was involved. He cleared Burns of criminal wrongdoing when he reviewed the case. But there was a wrongful death lawsuit filed by a civil rights attorney on behalf of the guy who was killed, or actually his survivors. And in that ruling, it says that Burns had no legal right, and that's the policeman, to use deadly force against Edwards. So, we have a judge who says that a reasonable officer should have known that slamming a suspect with enough force to kill him was not an appropriate response when a suspect was handcuffed. You know, I don't.
I mean, you have to wonder what was going through somebody's head to do that to somebody else just because you're in a position that gives you authority and control over another person to just take that and just kind of murder them on the spot. That's really brutal.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah, and interestingly, the camera went dark at very, and I have seen this more than one time. The cameras go dark during the most crucial points in the whatever it is, arrest or body slamming. You know,
mm-hmm.
Now interestingly, also the guy tried to shoot him with a stun gun. I wonder if even that is a necessity. And further down, you find out that the guy. Seems to have had having a seizure, and we've heard of other incidents where the police are barking commands at a guy who's deaf, you know, and they end up killing him. That's I mean, it's not here in Knoxville, but you know, it's the same type of thing.
It's this notion that you have to, and I've seen it. There's a video where somebody they actually put a dog on somebody who was being nonviolent. They considered him being belligerent just because he didn't want to give him his personal information and identify himself. He didn't feel like he was legally obligated to give them any extra information, and the officers disagreed. And I think over the course of 15 minutes, they finally just busted his vehicle open and sicked a police dog on him, and the dog's biting his arm, gnawing on him, and the man's screaming in pain, and they're trying to tell him to not just roll over or do this or that, but move the hands when the dog's got control of the arm. And it just there's no understanding that or at least from what I saw, it was just this assumption that people can obey. Like if I tell you to do something sitting down in a room across the table, I say, put your hands up, put your hands down, put them behind your back. That's one thing. But, you're talking about a active situation. And it's brutal. And in the face of brutality, just expecting us to respond like we're in some kind of training exercise is ridiculous.
Yeah, and there's also discrepancies in what the person, the policeman charged and found guilty by the judge said, and what the other policeman with him said. One of them said that he fell over the guy that was killed, and the other say that he was forced down the policeman mm-hmm. that was with him. So there were disagreements there, and but the fact is that this kid, he's really just a kid that was killed, was unarmed, handcuffed, and in the grasp of an officer much larger than him when he lifted up to supposedly kick his legs at the third officer. Oh, now here it says there was even a third officer, which I didn't notice before. So you got three officers that are armed and one guy who may be having an epileptic fit. And this kid was also crying out, saying, are you okay? I didn't mean to hurt you. And that's what the kid that was killed is saying to the cop that killed him. He said, so at the point where he says, are you okay, to the policeman, at that point, the body camera went black and silent for 4.5 minutes. And of course, the policeman that has been found guilty later said the device fell off in the struggle. So again, things went black. Now, you know, this is called when justice was not aborted, because at this point, the judge has found policeman guilty of improper use of deadly force or something like that. But it sounds like it's in the civil court. Now, the lawsuit's going to move forward, and it's interesting. The lawsuit seeks more than $150 million in compensation punitive damages against the policeman, against Patty, who's his partner, and the Blount County government. My parents live down in Blount County, but the legal action also accuses the sheriff, Jim Barong, of a pattern. Listen to this, a pattern of condoning and participating in cover-ups of bad and sometimes fatal behavior of deputies. And I think the one from, I was mentioning to you privately back in November of last year, a similar thing happened, and the person was shot to death by the policeman. And in that case, under the same sheriff, that policeman was exonerated by the cameras that none of us ever saw publicly. And it was, in that case, it was three officers against a single guy. But anyway, the point is, you know, there seems to be a pattern here of cover-up and fatal behaviors of deputies.
Yeah. So one question I have is, what did they – do you have the actual punishment that was given to the officer? Was he sentenced with prison time?
You can look through the list. I don't think that he's I don't think it says that. They're not dismissing a wrongful death lawsuit against Blount County and the sheriff's office deputy. So it looks like it's a civil thing, correct? In other words, it looks like he's gotten past the criminal deal. So this was only a judgment on civil, but it's, you know, at least it's something. So I you could say maybe justice is being aborted once again. But it may be a start toward, I mean, it seems to be more justice than I've seen in the past potentially, but now it is going to be, this case is going to be appealed. I'm pretty sure I read somewhere I don't see it here, but I read it somewhere that it's going to be appealed by the sheriff down in Blount County. So again, taxpayer dollars.
The same sheriff that has a reputation for abuse.
I believe that's the case. And I don't see it right here, but somewhere in the article, I think, but I'm pretty sure I read that it was going to be appealed, which, you know, it's sort of understandable, but it's almost like a double whammy to the people in Blount County. Honestly. Yeah. And now
good follow up on that would be to see if, know, what disciplinary action is happening to the officer. If he's if he's still out on the streets, then that is, that's a huge problem. Even if you're taking a look at, I know a lot of people say that, you're just dealing with a few bad eggs. And if that's the case, this is clearly one of them. So this officer needs to be gone, and everybody that was supporting him or helped him cover that up needs to be gone.
That will have to take some further investigation, because you hit me with that, and I wasn't thinking criminal until I read closer, and it's really a civil case. And it goes back to 2016, so it's 3 years old. Most people, I'm sure, have forgotten, and it just sort of popped up recently. You know, what caught me was it was not ordinary to see potential justice occurring, at least on the civil level, even. And anyway, I wanted to go back real quick, and then we'll go to the next story. But something you said about conservatives not, you know, kind of automatically being on the side of the police. And to me, it seems like if we want to be biblical, judicial and ethical over the way we look at things, the way we look at the world, then we need to be honest with Scripture. And I think that there may be the possibility that Romans 13 and specifically is being very misinterpreted, in that it's not a blanket statement of bowing down to all authorities. The authorities are supposed to be doing good toward the gospel spreading, you know, and they're not supposed to be bending over backwards to help murderers, that abortionists or women mm-hmm. who kill their babies, or, you know, I mean, it's not a blanket, you know, honoring of anyone who seems to be above another person.
Well, there's nowhere that the scripture gives any human institution to declare good evil and evil good. And, yes. You know, that's what our government is intent on doing, whether we like it or not. And we see it in a lot of different ways. And, you know, I know a lot of well-meaning people that, you know, honestly, I would kind of go to battle with them and to a point, but at the same time, their end game is still giving power to a system that's not designed to give true justice to anyone or anything at the end.
Right. And, you know, one of the questions it brings to me in this situation where a policeman killed someone is, what is the biblical and American viewpoint on justice historically? Now, I don't recall, for one thing, I don't recall nearly as large of a police presence, even over the last 5 years where I work. It's tripled in size. I'm seeing a whole lot more police action, period, and presence.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing them sitting in their computers in very expensive cars doing something. But, you know, to me, it seems like America, looking back, was more, for one thing, we didn't have the type of police we have now, going back, mm-hmm. I don't know, the 1820s or earlier, but you didn't have this almost standing army of police. But number two, it seems to me that the Bible is centered around the victim, the victim's rights, not the perpetrator of whatever the crime is. What's your feelings on that?
I mean, at the end of the day, historically, we did have a different sort of justice. And I know a lot of people will argue that our current police system, you know, has its roots in the founding of the nation. I think it's flat out wrong, you know, to look at that historically and say we're policing in the same kind of ways we did when we were attached closer to biblical law, and we had a understanding that that was the basis for law. The
I think that's true. The reason I said historically, it seems to me that we hear about revisionist history, and history is constantly being revised, kind of by the winners of governmentally or in the wars even. But so I think a lot of us that have come up through public schools or even in private schools, we may be getting very skewed and confused ideas of what the history even is. You know, how often were we taught the history of the police? You know, or, you know, we were always taught to honor them. You're always taught to salute a certain way. Automatically, you
say
honor
your
hope.
Pledge.
Yeah, you automatically do this, and you don't realize that even pledges were written by avowed socialists. You know, or strange things you start finding out. And I think that just for the listening audience out there, we all need to be finding out what our history really is and what freedom really means and what conservative even means, you know?
And one thing that's really telling just culturally is every time in a fairly libertarian conservative type county in Cherokee County, and I'm sure you'll see it in lots of places in Tennessee, and definitely all over Georgia, I see it. Anytime there's a question of tax, whether it's for schools, whether it's for police, you know, we continue to, one, vote for the people that are spending the money, and we're not really watching how closely they're spending or what they're doing with it. But they're also, you know, if there's a question in Georgia, whether we're going to have another 1% sales tax, or whether we're going to do away with it as soon as people start talking about, oh, it's for the schools, or, oh, it's for the safety of the officers, or the, you know, this department needs it, or we can have more parks, or what have you. You know, time after time, people are voting majority to say, yes, take more of my money. And I just don't understand that. And, you know, until we get past the mindset that these things are, you know, that the school system is not extremely biased, until we get past the mindset that we can, as humans, or until we get past the mindset of we cannot prevent crime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can punish it, and punishing crime is much more effective than trying to prevent it.
Right.
One thing, like just a quick thought on that is, if people were aware of the amount of law that is out there, you can Google how many federal laws in the United States, and you will see, the degree to which we are trying to control people as a government or as a country, the degree to which we're trying to control people. And a lot of it's just silly stuff. But there, it really is true that, you could be committing crimes every single day, completely unaware of it. And most of us probably are, because on top of the federal laws, you've got a whole litany of, administrative law, which is, really law that was created by bureaucrats with no public oversight in many cases. So you've got federal laws, and you've got administrative laws, and you've got your state and local laws on top of that. And they, at this point, I don't think it's practical for anybody to consider themselves a law-abiding citizen when you can't even know what the law was. When the slaves revolted in Rome, one of the complaints was that the people, that they couldn't have their freedom because they didn't understand law. And the reason they didn't understand law is they weren't allowed to read or study it.
Right. And, you know, you bring up a couple things, and I want to move on to this next subject, but, you know, what we see so often is almost two classes of people. You have the bureaucratic, administrative, politician, police that are judged by a different system of judgment than the rest of us that are sort of plebeians. This is not, you know, American justice. Historically, you had Miss Justice. She had her blindfolds over her eyes, and she would, was it balances she had in her hands? But anyway, the point was that justice was supposed to be equal across the board. So you didn't have more blacks being caged than whites percentage wise and that kind of thing. I don't know if you had anyone caged in the early days of America. By that, I mean the federal prisons, you know, I think I better move on before I forget my train of thought. I want to look to number two, possibility of where justice has not been aborted. There's a policeman locally in my own community in Newmarket that was just charged with soliciting sex from a minor. Now, the interesting part was there were a whole lot of different organizations that were involved in basically finding out what he was doing, but he's 43 years old and trying to do something with a 13-year-old. And it was a 4-week investigation. There's two articles I put up, but, and I can put these up online too, but, Jimmy Dunn was a fourth district attorney who was involved in one of the articles that doesn't mention him, but, this police officer was trying to mess around with some 13-year-old and get it set up. So he was, arrested and charged with solicitation of a minor. Some of the questions that came up to me was, I'm not saying it happened with this guy, but just your thoughts on the idea of stings or entrapment and that type of thing. And before you say anything, I want to go back to the one, something you said before it came back to my mind, was you were talking about all the laws that have been written. And I think we don't realize historically how much freedom we've lost in America, both to run a business, You got to do all kinds of regs, regulations. And, you know, they say they favor small business, but you know, as a small businessman, there's all kinds of problems if you want to have your own business that have been put there by the government that basically they're siphoning off funds and making it harder for you to do your job. And on top of that, the regulations, I remember Dr. George Grant wrote in one book, I think he was quoting someone else, but you'll find the people who don't want to keep the 10 commandments writing the 10,000 commandments. So it kind of goes along with what you said, you know, maybe it's 10 million, but
you know, and if you question whether or not we are losing freedoms or not, one thing that, I've thought for a long time, is, you know, it was your father or your grandfather, doesn't matter who you are, how old you are, was your grandfather and his father and his father and his father more or less free than the son?
Right.
So I'm just saying, as you generationally going back, there's been a steady eroding of freedoms and liberties. And really the 20th century has been full of it from you know, from the very get-go, really. Before World War One, we were.
It didn't start in the 60s like we're hearing all the time. And that's why I wanted to get to is, you know, talk about the conservative viewpoint, conservatives being in favor of the police and all this and, you know, saluting and all this kind of thing. But what the question I'd ask to conservatives out there is, what is the real conservative viewpoint? Because you got to make sure you're conserving the right thing. Find out what America was based on, and of course it was the Bible with the Puritans. They weren't perfect, but there were, you know, they had a very, very good foundation, better than anything since probably the nation of Israel. So, I mean, you've got to really, if you want to conserve something, conserve the right stuff, not stuff that FDR put in on immigration or what's his uncle, Teddy Roosevelt, or, you know, you got to find out what your history is. And that's partly why we are here. But I thought this was a little bit interesting that this new market officer has been charged. And it looks like when you read the article that it probably is a valid thing. I know that entrapment and stings may, you know, normally be not all that good, but there were five agencies involved. One of the only questions I had was, why is a drug task force involved? Do you have any ideas there? Or the Tennessee Highway Patrol?
You know, I guess at a certain point, you just start gathering whatever resources you can. On the one hand, you know, you are dealing with a situation of entrapment, but it sounds like they were pretty clear they had something to go off beforehand with this officer. And I really wonder how long he was on the police force. I mean, how many encounters did he have with people where, you know, he had opportunities to potentially molest or you know, even more mid-level harassment, but which is serious, especially from somebody who has the authority to control you in a very physical way.
Well, now you've raised some really good questions and things that I need as you know, as a citizen here in this little tiny city to investigate, because I have two neighbors that are aldermen. And they're, of course, over this policeman. And maybe I can find out some of those details, because, you know, the fact that there's five different or maybe even six different police organizations that investigated another policeman, that in itself is extraordinary, I think. Yeah, I didn't even think about it until I started reading it.
I'm not going to say anything most likely, sadly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
You know, there's a very
and none of them are listed.
Let's set aside ethics and justice when we need to watch our own back.
You know, it's a very good point, because when I see this list, not the New Market Police is not on the list of investigators. Yeah. Let's go on to the third. So we've talked about when justice is not aborted. Now I want to talk a little bit about voucher news, and we'll go quickly through this, but there's in Tennessee, we have a voucher bill that's been, you know, promoted, I think, 2 years ago, and it did not pass. And now they're trying it again. And just some comments on vouchers. But an interesting thing, the very first link that I have, there is a guy from Johnson City who is a Republican that Democrats kind of didn't like, because this is a Republican state right now. And but he mm-hmm. but and the Democrats have been wanting to get rid of this guy for quite some time because of his, once again, messing around with evidently children. And when he was a high school girls basketball coach, you know, several, you know, two or three decades back. But I guess he'd been, you know, a lot of the victims had been coming forward over the years and wanted his removal. Guy's name was Bird. And they wouldn't remove him, you know. Well, when he came out against recently against the he voted against the voucher bill, then, and he's a Republican, then the rest of the Republicans ousted him as the education chairman. So mm-hmm. the Democrats are fighting, are saying foul ball here. You know, this is hypocritical. You're getting rid of this guy now. Why didn't you, you know, much earlier? So that was kind of the first issue on vouchers, sort of a little side issue, but any comments mm-hmm. there? I mean, quick comments, but on that.
Well, you know, politics is a dirty business when you're going to just keep somebody's sins in your back pocket, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just to pull them out when it's convenient for you, mm-hmm. And to keep them close and concealed when it's, you know, when it's not good for you, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's really a form of blackmail mm-hmm. to do that. And it's sick, but I'm not particularly shocked to hear it happen.
Well, let me move on, because that's just a slight thing. So what happened with this voucher bill is at this point, it has passed the state house in a 50-48 vote. But one of the main guys, Jason Zachary of Knoxville, changed his vote. Now, he's changing his vote because Knoxville somehow is opting itself out of the overall bill, the state bill, which gives vouchers evidently to mainly certain areas in Memphis and Nashville. So it's like the basically Education Association, the TEA, is very dead set, as all teacher unions are, against any idea of vouchers, because they have this idea that vouchers are going to sap all their funds away, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, so anyway.
Why wouldn't they, I mean, instead of just kind of the bureaucrats and the politicians deciding who's going to opt in and opt out of something, seems like it would make sense if there were some areas that were for it and some areas that weren't, to make it a local issue. And you can even encourage or, you know, put a bill out from the state saying, hey, we're open to this policy, and you can vote in your local county, yes or no, whether you're going to keep it. But for the, you know, state level politicians to carve out one area or two areas sounds, it just seems a little suspicious. If they're really making a decision that's supposed to be good for the state, then why right. isn't it good for Knoxville?
Yeah, very strange.
But why is it something that the state needs to deal with instead of, why wouldn't it be more natural for the local areas to deal with that anyway?
Well, I think those are very good questions. And I have down here, basically on that, are vouchers good or bad in general? And my standpoint more is, I homeschooled my children. I'm a homeschooled grandfather, and we did it, number one, the very beginning, for academic purposes only. I mean, that was the main driving force, but really it's a freedom issue. Parents are to be in charge of their children. There's nowhere really an indication that that's a state, something the state's supposed to be involved with. But my question with vouchers has always been, and I know even in the homeschooling movement, there's a lot of disagreement here, but my question is, are there strings attached? And I would say that there probably are very strong strings attached to vouchers, because what happens is the only way this stuff is passed is if you're going to meet the same standards, low standards of the state. And so that's going to mean Common Core, most likely, different, you know, things like mm-hmm. that. And that is the very thing you'll hear from the teacher unions is, why these, you know, charter schools won't do that. And then the state assures them, oh yes, they will be keeping all the standards, and they will do the Common Core, and they will, you know, do whatever, you know, we tell them to do in order to keep the money coming for the vouchers. So their concern is that monies are going to flow out from the government schools and into the charter private schools. And by the way, homeschoolers are exempt from this House version of the bill. So they will not be getting any money for those that wanted to get some money.
Yeah. The not surprised that the state's not encouraging people to go through some form of their public indoctrination system.
Yeah, and this is why it's always kind of surprised me when I hear people kind of being for vouchers as homeschoolers. It's because to me there's a danger of strings being attached to it that are very dangerous. Now, tax credit. See, the problem is homeschoolers are being double taxed. It's not the other way around. And it's interesting in the that it actually was brought out. A concern was about homeschoolers, so much so that the House version makes them exempt where they don't get any money. So that means that there's been some pushback from the union. And it is a teacher union. So there are some real concerns here. I personally am,
People fighting over a piece of a pie that shouldn't even exist.
Right. Okay. That's a way to put it, and good summation. And then, I had down here too, the certain counties were exempt. I thought that very odd, kind of what you addressed already, but I want to move on to some vaccination news. So back to our title of Vaxxers, Vouchers, and When Justice Is Not Aborted. We've looked at When Justice is not Aborted, and we've looked at vouchers a little bit. The vouchers thing is not passed yet. It's only passed the House in Tennessee, but it's going to move on into the Senate, and there'll probably be more pushback because what was mentioned in the last show with the forfeiture law, we were trying to reduce the civil asset forfeitures, and at the very last minute, and I've heard this from sort of the inside, it was looking real good to reduce that, and some of the police got together in closed doors with some of the subcommittee, and basically pressured them, saying that we would we'd lose tools on the whole subject of human slavery, human
trafficking,
which people said, how did that have anything to do whatsoever with the? But it really scared this subcommittee, and they backed off on the idea. So, and what the police are doing is they're once again, and I hate to come back to the police because that's not the goal of this program at all. It's just that the news is hitting on this over and over and over again. And so we're not going to avoid these issues. We're going to come back at them. I'd like to hit other news, but it does come back to that a lot because they're sort of the enforcers of the, quote unquote law that you talked about, the multiplicity of laws and multiplicity of interference with business.
It's really interesting that you brought up the trafficking and, they it seems like, 5-10 years ago, they would have brought up the drug war, and now trafficking is the key word whenever they want money, but also the standards of what's considered trafficking have changed quite a bit as well. I heard referenced an article, I didn't have time to read it, but basically where trafficking was or communities where the wages weren't what somebody else thought they should have been was considered human trafficking. And just kind of you find a word that creates sympathy or a phrase or a concept, and as soon as the politicians and the people looking for the money for their projects find the key word that triggers the sympathy and empathy and gets people a little bit more willing to spend the money and let them do their thing, that definition gets watered down very quickly.
Yes.
And, I've seen it with
expanded.
The war on women issues. I've seen the kind of the same thing.
The opiate crisis. That's the big one right now too. Opiate crisis.
Yeah. So it's just, when you talk about a word that just like brings up a whole set of emotions, and then you try and cover other things that often are just like barely even connected, or you have to just have a unethical understanding of the world to really connect two words two concepts. And but it's just a tactic to open the checkbooks and continue in practices that everybody already knows is bad.
Well, I want to go into a third one, and I think might be that. And you know, when you're trying to cover news, problem is we don't have enough reporters. We don't have people that go to the meetings. We don't have they talk about fake news. We don't have, the problem I see is we don't have any news. I mean, and what I mean by that is we don't have the details we need. We don't really know what the references are. And one of those is this vaccination, or the vax versus the anti-vax. And the reason I hit on this is because it's right there. It's in the forefront now, and you can't, you know, you can't escape it. You know, I wouldn't personally talk a lot about Notre Dame and all that, because I don't think it was a major thing. But this vaccination news is a worldwide thing, and it's just curious to me. I personally don't seem to land on either side. I see problems either way. I had a pastor a couple of years ago who nearly died of malaria, and because he had not gone through, he was kind of being presumptuous. And he admitted and repented in front of the whole church, where he almost died, that he'd been presumptuous and not operated properly. I don't think vaccines are involved there, but with the whole vaccination thing, we have this measles crisis. It was started up in New York. There was some county there where they quarantined everybody. They couldn't even go to their churches if they weren't vaccinated. It was crazy. So this first article says, we found additional cases have been identified in East Tennessee. Two additional cases of measles have been identified. And I've read a couple articles. It sounds like there's been five cases. But the Tennessee department it says, so now the confirmed cases stands at three. There's another article that says it's at five. And so these cases are associated with measles that came about 2 weeks ago. The state did not identify the cities where the people with the new cases live. That's kind of odd. Makes me wonder why it says, you know, and then health officials say the first East Tennessee case may have, I always like these words like may have. It's kind of like when you read an evolutionist or a cosmologist article and they say maybe, or it possibly could be. If you read all the little weasel words, you have articles that have nothing in them, you know, ultimately. And there are more than 700 confirmed cases of measles, it says nationwide. Now, somewhere I read today that of those 700, over 500 had not been vaccinated. Okay.
Were they born? How many of those people, 700 people, were even born here? Or,
well, you know, you're raising my question was, okay, 500, okay, over 500 had not been vaccinated, which means, okay, up to 200 may have been vaccinated. Why are they getting it? You know, that's the first question I have is, okay, then why are the vaccinated getting measles? If you know, so one of the questions I have here, one of my vaccination concerns is, what's the effectiveness of this whole procedure? I've talked
to... I have heard with measles that there is basically an effort to, because the vaccination is not completely effective, but one of the ways that they do limit it is if... Basically, the vaccinations are effective enough to keep the disease contained through the population, although they're not, you know, completely effective in every individual state, or I mean, in every individual case. So, you know, that's something I heard quite a while ago. I'd really have to, I couldn't give you any sources on that. It's just something that I've heard and I guess that gets into the issue of why is a vaccination or somebody not vaccinated a risk to somebody who is vaccinated?
Well, because you can still
get it. But whose job is it to prevent disease, though? I mean, we take the best measures and steps that we can. And at the end of the day, you know, I don't think – I have any obligation prevent somebody else from getting sick unless I know that I currently have something that will get somebody sick.
Yeah, and you know, normally when people are sick, I mean, I remember we didn't have nearly as many vaccines when I was growing up, and I don't want to say how old I am, but the thing is we just got the childhood diseases and went through it, but we didn't go out in the public. We stayed home when we were sick because, number one, you're sick and you don't feel good, you know?
Except with chicken pox.
Well, even then, I mean, you're sort of itching and stuff, and you sort of self-quarantine. So I've got an article here. It said from Knoxville, it talked about where and why kids are not being vaccinated for measles in Knoxville. And it says there are 5 measles cases. And my question was, is this an important number or is this just alarmism? You know, and I wanted to go a little further down. It says there's a lack of access. This is a question I had. Lack of access is more common obstacle than anti-vax philosophy. And I was like, you know, what is her source? What do you mean lack of access? Because I read somewhere else that all this is being given free through the Obamacare, which they're calling affordable care, but it's not affordable at all. It's not free. Mm-hmm. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch. These people don't know economics, but someone's paying for this stuff, else they wouldn't be making this stuff, you know. But anyway, I question her sources because the Knox County Health Department spokesman, Catherine Killen, says a lack of access is a more frequent barrier than personal opposition. It's a much smaller population than what the social media or internet world would have you believe. Now, I wasn't aware that the social media and internet are trying to make us believe anything. I don't even understand those kind of statements. And she has the problem with so much science is there's no sourcing. You know, I mean, popular science articles, they don't source the stuff. So again, sloppy reporting. We don't know any more than when we started the article. And this is a very, you know, it can be very emotional and you care about your kids. Then they start talking about temporary certificates. Students with religious exemptions are the major cases that don't do it. But one of my things I question was, and I also, one of the ladies has a 2-year-old son who's immunosuppressed. She said that she opposed the idea of mandatory vaccination, even with medical exemptions, and she felt the fears that unvaccinated kids could spread disease were overblown. And I would agree with kind of what she says, and what you said was that how do those that are not vaccinated, how do they pose a threat to the vaccinated?
Yeah.
I don't understand. So, I mean, you know, so
I think some of it, there is a certain element. I can't remember one year where there wasn't a major disease in the news cycle. And right now it's measles and it's very closely associated to the vaxxers and that whole issue just because it does bring up a lot of questions there. But I do think there is an effort, from, let's say, the CDC generically to represent government's medical interests. Whether it's Zika or West Nile virus, if you remember when everybody freaking over that.
That's right. It's going back to the other one. What's the big one down in Africa now? It's back to that again.
Ebola? Ramping up again?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the doctors are being killed and stuff, supposedly in the Congo, you know.
I think it serves the medical community, their interest to keep diseases in the news. And every time there's, a avian bird flu or any random disease that is just unique or different, it's a good opportunity for that community to get the attention so they continue to have their little fiefdom of government and the money keeps going to them and citizens are willing to consider them the experts and it just allows them to be the big men in the room at that time.
Well, I you sound possibly more jaded than me, I want to go through a list here of things that I had and then we'll finish up because some of the vax concerns I had were, one, is it poisonous? Number two, is it effective? Is fetal tissue being used? Freedom threats? threats to homeschoolers? How do non-vaccinated threaten the vaccinated? We talked about that a little. How big are the disease threats? We talked about that a little. Why is the WHO type UN organization so concerned? And is this a reaction or an overreach in reaction to climate change failure? So, I mean, we can toss those around real quick, but I wanted to go back to number two here. You know, when you talk about the profession itself, I have a nurse practitioner friend. We were hiking close to the Smokies, and she assured me that she has many, many more cases coming to her all the time now of very symptoms that ought not be together. And in every case when she asks them, they have had the flu shot. And so she thinks that there is some kind of conspiracy and that there is sort of a random fiddling around with the vaccines, and they want to actually eliminate populations. Now, I'm not saying she's totally sane, but she is a nurse practitioner in the field. Then about 20 years ago, I heard a couple of reformed family doctors that said the efficacy of this stuff was almost zero. On the other hand, there's another reformed guy, Jonathan Sefardi. I've got some books by him, who's written a couple of excellent books on confronting evolution, the mythology of evolution, and I can't remember the names of the books, but very, very good scientific, solid scripture and science in his books. And he's very pro-vax. So, you know, those kind of things, people you respect sort of influence you too. So I get caught kind of in the middle of things. But what concerns me, you've mentioned to me before about the fetal tissue issue. Can you talk about that a tiny bit?
I mean, anything that we put in our body or that we purchase, we have to have some concern of how it's sourced, what materials are in it. I'm not somebody that, you know, feels like I need to make sure a diamond that I purchase, nothing bad happened involved in that. But if you start injecting, you know, human murdered babies into my skin, that's a serious concern to me.
When you don't hear it. You don't really hear that very often when it comes to the vaccines. You'll hear about mercury, about poison. My thing more is what you're saying, and I'd almost forgotten that one, but also effectiveness, whether it even really works. And the third thing is the whole power issue. Because
Malthusian beliefs ultimately bring you to eugenicist ideas and inclination. So that is, I guess, a risk, a problem that people are doing something poisonous or nefarious with the vaccines. But I really don't think you have to go to a conspiracy level to really start questioning some of these ideas. I believe you mentioned there are over, is it 300 vaccines that
by the age of five
are recommended now by the age of five?
Yeah.
And it's one thing if you are stopping something significant and major, like polio, a great triumph, I'd say, of vaccines, ending serious, crippling, debilitating diseases that were really affecting large segments of the population. When you're doing that with technology, and vaccine is a relatively new technology, if you look at it that way, you're doing good things. But when you start trying to take it to the extreme and prevent every discomfort that's, common things that children just routinely, their immune systems go through, there could be some benefit to some of these, but when you add them all up, at a certain point, if you don't prioritize what's effective and what's necessary and what's important, if there's no conspiratorial foul play at all, you still have to understand that our best medical attempts are stumbling in the dark, because our bodies were fearfully and wonderfully made. They're extremely complex.
Psalm 139. Yep.
You put stuff in it, and medicine is helpful, but it can also be harmful.
I think
a cost benefit analysis that needs to be very detailed on every one of these. And if it's really not a significant benefit than pushing it down our throats like we've got to have it. One, I think it comes from a bad ideology that we can actually prevent all diseases. And, you know, maybe one day on this side of glory, we'll be a lot better at it than we are now, but we're just not there yet.
Yeah. And I always come back to the efficacy of the whole thing. I come back to the control issues. And I want to hit on three titles I just found tonight, but my concern is that this is a new meme. Is that the right word for it? A meme, but, where,
that's how I say it.
Again, where we've avoided the climate change has not worked. The green stuff hasn't really been working. And this is just another way of compulsorily doing stuff. For instance, the Independent magazine today or yesterday put out this thing, compulsory vaccination could be justified if measles returns. That's one. And then the whole thing's full of anti-vaxxers are dangerous. It goes into just all over the world. Then there's another one here. Measles are spread. They're blaming it on they're blaming the whole spread of this, and the spread's not very big. And my, you know, like I said, there's an instance of 700 in America, and 200 of those evidently were vaccinated. Now, here's another one: viral misinformation. This is from USA Today. Now, this gets back into the question too of what's fake and real news, and these terms are being thrown around. But myself, I never have looked at USA Today as any kind of a serious newspaper whatsoever from the very first day. You know, I mean, I guess it came out of down there at CNN or whatever down in Atlanta. Is that true? Ted, what's his name? But I mean, it's just kind of, it's Ted more Trump. Of a, Ted, yeah, I can't think of his name right now, but anyway, this, I've never considered
this
libel magazine of any sort. It's a, you know, like Inquirer or something, but the viral information rise of the anti-vaxxer movement requires news literacy inoculation. I look at the title, I go, you know, I don't even know what they're saying, you know, but you know, there's certain groups we'll look at them. We'll go, I don't trust them. I don't trust them. I don't trust them. And then the quote other side will do the same thing. But, you know, these articles are never sourced. Viral information, is spreading into sickness as the measles outbreak continues to grow. You know, they use words like viral misinformation, and then they start, it ends up being an attack on the internet, which is the modern Gutenberg press.
You're the president, and you're sitting
that's
across
true.
From me right now.
That's true.
I produce more than I promised. True.
It's true.
That's true.
It's true. It's true. It's true.
That's such a true story.